Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by Scale Up Consulting, helping FinTech startups create a scalable organization to support an ever-increasing demand. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Now, over to the show with Richard Doty, founder and host. Hello, folks, and welcome to another episode of the FinTech Scaling Show. On the FinTech Scaling Show, we talk to cutting-edge leaders, and we chat to them about their experience and their insights in scaling their businesses. And today, really excited to welcome Gabrielle on the show. Gabrielle is the CEO and co-founder of CoinRule, and he's had a really interesting background. I mean, you have worked as an investor, as a consultant, you've worked as a mentor, and you are working as a mentor, and you've also worked across different industries. So a wealth of experience and knowledge to tap in today. So welcome, mate, and looking forward to the show today.
Hi, everyone. Hi.
Brilliant. So let's jump into it. And just for our listeners today, as I always say at the start of the show, have a notepad and a pen available. There's going to be some nuggets that you can take away directly and start actioning in your life and in your business today to get you towards your ideal scene. So today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be looking at leaders' journey and how Gabrielle as a leader and you all as leaders need to really organize yourself and your life in order for you to get to your desired state and your desired outcome. So let's jump into it. And let's start off with a topic around organization. I think that's most probably the easiest place to start. And what I'd like to know, Gabrielle, is we started the off air, we were talking about your busy schedule and investor calls and operational meetings, etc. But when all of these things are going on in your life, how do you organize your day, your week, your month, your quarter, and even your year to make certain that you are moving forward and also you and the team are moving forward together?
Yeah, that's a good question. So in terms of organization, I'm a little bit of a Nazi. So I'm very, very structured, and I have one central point of reference that is my Google Calendar, right? So everything that I have to take in consideration, it's on my Google Calendar, even if it's a note, even if it's like anything is there. And there is a very specific rhythm that I follow. So usually the Mondays are for planning, and I book the whole day just for the team and to talk to everyone in the team. So there are no external calls. And then, so Monday, like we have the product planning, we have design planning, we have the leadership planning as well. We check the OKR. Then middle of the week, we have on Wednesday, we have what's called the antisocial day. So basically everyone is just like heads down working, and I only do one check-in with the designers. Mm-hmm. And then on Friday, we have the day where actually we check the OKR. So we introduced the OKR framework around like 3 months ago, and it's working very well. We adopt a very light version of it, so we don't use any specific tool. You just use a spreadsheet. And then that kind of gives us the rhythm every week to focus on the main OKRs. Also, the OKRs, we only select around 5 of them per quarter, so that they are very clear and they are easy to communicate. And this is my major rhythm. Then on top of that, I have some specific tools that I use, like Calendly, for example. Calendly saves my life. Sometimes, organizing a meeting can take hours. We have like back and forth, but with Calendly, basically saves my life. Sometimes the conversation becomes too transactional, obviously, when you want to meet someone because you just share a link. Yeah. But with that one, we actually managed to have a very good balance of internal meeting with our team and external meeting with investors, suppliers, and also interviews with external candidates. Also, another thing that I do, usually my meetings are not long. So usually the maximum like 15 minutes. In extreme cases, 30 minutes, because usually in 50 minutes, you can really go straight to the point, communicate what you need to say. And also in case you can also extend it slightly by 5 minutes, 10 minutes. So having like a lot of short meetings really helps me just like get to the point and also have a lot of time to actually do delivery work, because at the moment, CoinRule, my company, it's a 12-people company. We are expanding probably doubling by the end of the year, but still a CEO at this stage, you need to do strategy work as well as some delivery work as well. And you want to have a hands-on approach in the team.
And you mentioned OKRs, and you look at OKRs on a Friday, and then that gives you the rhythm for the next week. So do you look at things that have gone well and things that have gone bad, maybe not so well, from an OKR perspective on a weekly basis, and sort of try rebalance them and refix them going into the next week?
Yes, totally, totally. I mean, you know the saying, like, planning is good, plans are bad, right? So the exercise of planning, it's very good to bring all the team together. For us, it's not really about, like, you know, what we have to do and what we have achieved. It's more about bringing everyone in the mindset of working towards a business goal that brings value to the users, instead of getting lost on some platform work, infrastructure work, and then you really then forget what you're actually producing and delivering. So for us, it's a tool to bring people together. And then every quarter we have one big meeting with the extended team where we actually set up the new OKRs. So this is what we do. And then we have also another thing that's very interesting we started to do a few months ago. It's called the Idea Box. So the Idea Box, it's something that and really facilitates the sharing of ideas. So it's a box, a virtual box, where everyone can put, like, comments, feedback, ideas. And then we open that one every 3 months, and then we share all the content. And then I go and I actually add all those ideas into the roadmap. But yeah, I mean, I think the main key to keep organizing for me is just, like, decluttering constantly. So I delete emails, I delete calendar invites. I'm just, like, just going around cleaning up everything and deleting, just removing the dust constantly.
Nice. And you also mentioned the anti-social day. What does this give you as a leader and also as a company, just being able to block out the noise? It feels like you're blocking out the noise and just focusing on, you having one day to focus on the stuff that you need to focus on in order to reach your objectives for that week.
Yeah. I mean, initially, that's what we aim for, to have some space, mind space to strategize. But then at the end of the day, it always end up like that we do the work that's very important. So I would say on Wednesday, like, the half of the morning, it's antisocial, but we still end up, like, talking to each other in the team. But then the afternoon, it's really where my creative brain really activates. You know, from 2 p.m. onwards, I become much more creative, much more thoughtful. So that's on Wednesday afternoon. It's that where I sit down with my notebook and I sketch a lot. My background is in design and UX design. And then I went to do business. So for me, I make use of the visual intelligence a lot. So I need to sketch things, box flows, and all these diagrams to actually understand the structure of the team, how we need to transform the culture, all the single roles. And usually Wednesday afternoon, the antisocial day for me, it's vital, really. Without that space where you can take a step back and see the macro picture, I think the company will be without direction, without that specific window.
Having the structure in place, it feels like you're the cause of your own destiny, i.e. you're putting in a structure that means you're moving in a direction and having space to move in that direction all the time. So in a way, your priorities are automatically and also, I guess, known or created, and also meetings that would come in at certain points in the week, or certain points in a month, are then scheduled correctly, so you can still go on your rhythm and pick up the things that are maybe ad hoc and what have you when required. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yes, I try not to have ad hoc meetings anymore. I know that makes the work too mechanical and serious, you know, and not, like, so, like, organic. But I think I, like, kind of, I would say 70% of the meetings are kind of systematic, you know, programmatic, like, and they're, like, in 3 months, in quarters, and then scale down in month and in week. And then I try to have maybe 20-30%, just leave it, like, some space in case there's some ad hoc meeting. But I think that the trick is always to understand, like, do we really need to have this meeting? Not, you know, this is a priority. I usually have my daily post-it where I always write down 5 things to do, and 5 is the right number, because if you already achieved 3 of them, you already done more than half. So you feel already that you achieved something today. So usually my average is, like, I finish 4 things per day, and there's always one left that I bring the next day. So I'm very, very functional and operative. But sometimes, on Wednesday, I take that space to also kind of sometimes just push the brake and change the company drastically. It happened actually last week. We had like a proper, like we ran a proper agile process with the two sprints, you know, planning, retrospective, product refinement. But I saw that it was not working. So we have been trying that for like 6 months, the way we are doing now. Before, it was like shorter sprints. And yeah, it was just like we had a team of 8 engineers and it was not really functioning, performing. So what I did, I was like, guys, for 3 months, let's just try kind of an approach that where everyone works on the same modular features. Like, so imagine like 6 to 8 engineers. Actually, we left one for maintenance, 7 engineers just working on one thing. And actually it seems that it's working. So, and I took this decision just out of like ideas by reading and by strategizing, then kind of having a brainstorm with my co-founders. But it was, everything was done in 1 or 2 days. So we had to basically manage and switch the structure of the team, change the structure of the team within basically 1 day. And funny enough, I mean, the people really liked it and people enjoyed to work in this way because they feel more that are working in a collaborative way. And when they work in a collaborative way, me as the one that's supposed to lead them, to direct them, it's like just like, it's much more easy because they are more receptive to the ideas within that collaborative framework. Mm-hmm. I think my leadership style is collaborative most of the time. And sometimes I just switch to command and control when there is some emergency. But so having people that are happy to work and collaborate and brainstorm, for me, it's very, very important because it's also what you do when you work as a designer, as an architect in the creative space, right? Everything is always like a trade-off. Mm. It's always like sketching together on a whiteboard using post-its. And that's the way I usually try to also insert in my company.
And okay, I guess you mentioned this in parts of this question, but as you move forward and grow up, how are you making certain that you as a leader and also you as a leadership team are doing the things that are in your strength zone, right? So you guys do the things that you're good at, and then you bring in superstars to do the things that they're good at.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a balance, right? You turn the superstars. We employ people that are much better than you. They're much more like expertise than you in specific sectors. But then you need to have the founders, the leaders that actually nudge everyone into a specific direction. Mm. And I know if I'm good at that, but I do a lot of that. I'm like day and night always nudging, trying different way of communicating the same thing in different modes. And sometimes, I mean, I don't mind to over-communicate. I don't mind to be boring. And yeah, to always be like the old guy that repeats the things 20 times, as long as then the message is clear. And I think that's the secret. Like sometimes, you know, when you get like a very senior person in the team, we now just got the new CTO. Mm. It's amazing because you don't need to specify each like task or tickets or strategy in details because they just take the stuff and they go and they actually build something much better. Mm. So I think when you have a senior leadership team, you can really rely on them. And I mean, you're paying them so much and they can really change your company for good. So you can just like trust them 100%. I think the art of delegation, to delegate, it's something that you have to learn pretty early in your company, in your startup. I think now I'm used to the first year, maybe I was a little bit less, more like a micromanager, but now I'm a little bit more comfortable because also the level of people that joined is much, much higher. But I think it's you know, the superstars are good, but they need to work in a team, like in a football team. So, and I mean, the leader is the one that has to merge all together, everyone in the same, in one's big dough. And yeah,
because it's like this, right? You guys are, you're leading you. Let's take football. Mourinho is out in Italy now, right? But, you know, he's a good coach, popular to contrary belief, but he's a good coach. He's got really good players. He's got superstars. He's got an ecosystem that he has to manage and he has to push forward to get Roma to win a title, right? So in the same way, as a founder and as a co-founder, you are coaching at a point in time when you're growing up, you're coaching and you're making certain that your team's coming together, you're gelling them, you're increasing that leadership balance, the people underneath, and you're pointing them in a direction, giving those nudges, as you call it, and also delegating different types of, you know, roles and responsibilities to them so they can obviously fit within the ecosystem, but also excel.
Yeah, and obviously the people that you promote actually define your culture. You know, the people that you fire also define your culture. Yeah. So basically being a leader, a co-founder, being up there, it's a difficult role because you're constantly judged by everyone, upside, downside. You know, my investors are like now more than 20 people, and they always look at me and they ask me stuff. And then I have the team, and then you have the advisors. Mm. So you're constantly judged for whatever you do. And that kind of signals specific part of your culture. So that's why it's also important to lead with the specific values and principles, so that you can have you can set up those boundaries and those frameworks for people to play within. So we have the value of diversity. We have the value of life-work balance. We call it life-work and not work-life, because for us, life comes first, and the job should be around you and accommodate your life. Should be like flexible. That's why we call that. So for example, in Coin Rule, between 7 a.m. and 11 p.m., you can work whenever you want. Some people have kids, some people have hobbies, they go off 2 hours, they come back. For us, it's a big value. Now, setting up that framework really makes people act in a specific way. And if you get a superstar that you see doesn't fit with those values, obviously that can be disruptive in a negative way. So it's very important, obviously, recruitment, when you get people in, that they actually understand what are the values. And obviously, as a CEO of the company, I'm doing like so many interviews every day. And I think my job is now finding the right people, right? Yeah, because a company is actually a company. It's made of people. And the denominator
is people, right?
Exactly. It's crazy. And it's also a statistical job, right? You interview 1,000 people and then potentially you get 20 that are good. So it's really, it's a relentless work to actually find good people that also match together and then give them the values to connect to each other.
So what's your philosophy in dealing with people? It is a people business, although it's a tech company that is there. But what's the philosophy? How do you deal with investors, with the recruitment process, with all these different characters? How do you approach that?
I mean, obviously, different people want to get something different from you, and you need to treat them in a different way. Especially, there is the big dichotomy, like introverts and extroverts. That's the main thing. And then you got the more technical guys and the more creative guys. So they have four dimensions, right?
Yeah.
So I try to be flexible, but at the end of the day, the best thing is to have a co-founder that is complementary to you, so that he can take some type of conversations, right? Where I can take some type of more straightforward and more direct conversation. For example, with my co-founder, he's very good at kind of being the moderator, very nice to everyone. When usually I'm the one that comes in and they have a specific angle, a specific view, and try to give like specific direction. Mm. And so with people, it's usually, I try to be like kind of non-nonsense. So like literally like, hey man, like being very, very open, transparent. When I write an email, when I also talk to someone in a conference call, I always think that everyone else is listening, right? Mm. So there's nothing that you can take at any point in time from my communication and say like, oh, you said these things that actually was offensive or was unrespectful. Mm. I always have an approach that's like always being on stage, basically. Mm-hmm. So that approach shows to the others that they can have, you know, the communication is always the same for everyone, and we are very open. And that's how I treat people, like the same way, like with common sense. And obviously, culturally, the common sense can be different from, we have people in the Maldives, people in Nigeria, people in Lithuania, in UK, in Italy. Yeah. And that's a bit tricky, for example. So we found that the main characterization at this point, what makes people change their approach in communication, it's religion. So the people in the Maldives, they're Muslim, and you know it's completely fine. But they have a different approach to authority, right? So they will never push back on me. They are very, very respectful. And that sometimes can be an obstacle in terms of, being frank and communication. The people in Lagos, for example, in Nigeria, they are more like proper Catholic, even more than me that I'm in Italy. Mm. And for example, they really, they have a lot of compassion and they drive with that value. So I think I try to adapt to those different cultures. So by giving them space, by asking continuously like feedback, but obviously like it's difficult. It's difficult. But that's my way of managing people and treating basically human resources, like trying to be as close as possible to their culture and just really explain the full picture, because you know everyone is a brain and you know everyone can understand business talks and marketing, and business is basically best practices. It's not rocket science. So if you explain to an engineer, a developer, or to a designer something about business, it takes like maybe 15 minutes more, but then you will have someone that has learned something and it's more like he's buying into the mission.
I hear you, and I like what you're saying there about culture. and you brought in the African culture, which is very tribal. People like I'm originally from South Africa, and I know that they have the Zulus and Causes there, and it's very much, you know, the chief says this or the head of the house says that, and everyone has to sort of follow suit, right? So I think it's so important to have empathy, which I think what you said, to have empathy for people's backgrounds and people's cultures. And you quite nicely said you're open to engaging with them and trying to figure out a balance, so there's room for communication, right?
Totally. And it's hard because sometimes you just end up spending a lot of time like explaining things two, three times. But I don't see any other ways if you want to have a fully remote company, right? So for example, for us, when we recruit someone from the UK, it's just like a no-brainer, super easy.
Yeah.
You know, I've been in London for like 12 years. I always worked in the UK. So I have that type of standard of work. But so when you get someone from the UK, it's just like everything is so easy. But then, you know, you don't get access to a huge talent pool. And that's why we are fully remote. But also because we believe in the future work, that is basically everyone is almost like an entrepreneur that joins a company because you like the missions. And actually, the best employees for us are the one that contacted us, and they really loved the crypto space and they were passionate about that. And they really wanted to improve the user experience in that space.
And just going back to the structures of your business and how you set yourselves up to succeed, you mentioned earlier on that you give people the free rein in a way. You give them the space to log in at 7 and log out at 11 or 12 o'clock that same night, and they drop in and they do their stint and they complete their deliverables or whatever they need to complete. But as a founder and as a co-founder and as part of the leadership team, I know it's difficult to switch off. It's difficult to start and it's difficult to stop. But have you come up with a way to sort of start your day, start your habits, and then also stop your day at a certain time that allows you to live life? You mentioned life and work. So, yeah, it'll be interesting to find out, how do you start your day? How do you stop your day? What are the triggers and habits that you put in place to make certain that sort of that rhythm is continuous?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, just to have a laugh, but I think being Italian helps on that, you know, like being Italian is like, I like to enjoy life, and it's not hard to enjoy life as we chop for me. I can see with my co-founder, it's much more stressed. You know, he comes from East Europe, half British, half German, and half Moldovan as well. And so basically I think in the evening, I cannot function more than 7-8 hours a day. That's the truth. So I switch off, then I go and play tennis in the evening. I play a lot of tennis. And I always try to go out every evening, like for some cultural activity, meeting friends and dinners. So I think that's I can switch off very easily in the evening. But in the morning, when I wake up, I have my few things to do. Like, you know, like I have like my HIIT training that is like only 10 minutes, but it really activates my brain. I start working with after breakfast, and then I have a stand-up desk. So it keeps me much more active.
Yeah.
And then during the day, I'm really like a train. I'm very, very fast on everything. Very, very functional. But then around 6 p.m. I have a crash and I need to do something else. And I used to have a lot of hobbies. Obviously, with the companies, I have less of them. But I just like to refresh my brain with other things that are like not related to business. You know, it goes from art, painting, like anything. Then it's like so many things, even cooking. I love cooking anyway. So,
well, you're Italian.
Exactly. Yes. Exactly.
You're creative, right? I mean, it also, these other activities stimulate your creative part of your brain. It obviously switches off, and you come back the next day and you're like, okay, fine, I can go off and I can create again.
Yeah, I think I've been working for like, 15 years as a UX designer, head of UX and stuff like that. So you went from a phase where the art design was my passion, and then it became a profession. And now that I'm actually an entrepreneur, so I'm more like based on business, art is again like a passion. And I love it. I really love it. I just to take my brain off the rational thinking that I have to do every day as a product manager and leader. So I think that's now my free time. I think it's about art and design. And that creativity then stimulates my thinking, because you can also have creativity in your business world, even on an Excel sheet when you actually do the financials, you can be creative. Creativity can be applied to anything. And also all the design thinking techniques, you can apply them widely. I think the design thinking and methodologies are in our DNA in the company. Like everyone does user research in the company, talks to users, translate that into Sketch. Everyone really. So it's funny because it's very interesting what comes up, you know, when we take a developer and they start doing design, and you take a design and start doing programming. So I really like the interdisciplinary approach in my company.
And for our listeners out there that are moving on and growing their business just as you are, what are the top tips that you can give them both personally and professionally to look out for and as they continue their journey?
In their professional career, I think there is a huge focus nowadays in podcasts and being always switched on and always learning, you know, reading a lot more. It's nice to read, but it's nice to read stuff that are unrelated to work. So at some point, I mean, I had so many books about business, and I just realized that for the last 5 years, I just read business books. Yeah. And so I stopped doing that now. So, and I'm really just reading novels because it's much more interesting, to be honest. And so I think, and then obviously there are also like summer schools that you can take, even if you're like, you know, much more like your family or kids. So I think there are several ways to learn, not just about podcasts and books. What I also make use of a lot is mentors and advisors. I always go around and ask everyone for advice, always, like on LinkedIn, even people that I don't know, I just contact them. It's like, hey, look, can I pay this amount for like 1 hour of your time? And that's amazing because people have so many like nice experiences and they have so many methodologies that they've modified and using a specific way. So that's really, really cool, like a mentorship. So when I do mentorship at Google and also at Imperial College, and I also like to be mentored a lot. So that's why I like that approach.
Oh, awesome. And as you guys are scaling up and moving on and growing, what as a leadership team, what factors are you considering? And what questions are you asking yourself to make certain you hit your, hit your 12-month targets and hit your vision and your mission that you set out to achieve?
Mm-hmm. Okay. So the main question at the moment is, are the guys in the team at the moment, guys and girls in the team, some of them are ready to become manager? Because obviously we are scaling up the company, we are going to have some leads in each team. Yeah. And because there's always this dilemma, right? So you have someone that's very good at his job, is like our head of trading is very good at his job. And will it be good if we move him in another unit as a manager of 10 people? We don't know. You know, sometimes it's just better to say, okay, you stay in that channels and you continue on that career, unless they want to change. So that's the main worries for me, is like understanding how we scale up the team with a new layer of management. Because every 6 months, if you're an entrepreneur, you have to change the structure of the company and change the way you work. So your job changes every 6 months and you need to learn a new job every 6 months. That's why being a CEO, it's difficult because it's constant learning journey. It's a constant learning journey. And so that's the worry. Now in the next 12 months, we have one main metrics that is MRR. So monthly recurring revenues. We have like 200K MRR. So at the moment you are at 100, we just need to do 2X on that. Yeah. And yeah, that's the main like business metric.
Oh, brilliant. And you already mentioned self-education, but I'm going to put you on the spot. So, I mean, what podcasts or books or YouTube channels or courses do you think are good for our listeners to either listen to or read that will allow them to, I guess, go to the next level and scale up their knowledge?
Yeah. Okay. So let's see. Podcasts. I usually listen to James Altucher. Yeah, he's pretty cool. I like him a lot. And then sometimes I just scroll on my app with podcasts. I just jump on random podcasts about anything, really, like like about sport, about food. But the one about sports, I really like them because they tell you all the challenges that athletes going through. And I feel like an athlete on the business side. And then in terms of books, I mean, there was this one, this book I read 2 months ago was The Flash Boys. It's amazing. It's the story of how high frequency trading was born. And it's these two guys that did crazy stuff in the 90s. Like they run a cable from New Jersey to New York, like a huge cable, and they tell you about how you can have like a better orders and better trading just by being closer to the exchange. Anyway, so it's amazing. It's an exciting story. Actually, Netflix is making a movie out of it. I think it's coming out next year as well. Yeah, it's going to be one of those books, like, you know, The Wolf of Wall Street, one of those for male audience. And then another one that's also very exciting I'm reading now, it's Hackers and Painters. From Paul Graham. And that's pretty cool. There's the first part. It talks all about like high school and how the community of students, teenagers deal with life. And that's very interesting. But then it starts like moving into actually the difference between hacking and engineering.
Yeah.
And also designing. And that's super, super interesting. I think a lot of people will find a lot of similarities in their job if they do startup.
Brilliant. And listen, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show today. And for all our listeners, at the top of the show, I ask you to make certain you have a piece of paper and a pen and take notes during the show. And there's been lots of actionable nuggets. So look at those nuggets. See what you can do to draw up a list and start actioning them from today. Get going. And if you have any questions, why don't you reach out to me at richard@scaleupconsulting.co. Happy to answer any questions off the back of today's episode. And Gabriel, listen, mate, brilliant listening to you today and really enjoyed our conversation and really looking forward to watching you guys scale up and really move forward to your mission over the next few weeks, few months, and also obviously a few years.
Thank you very much, Richard. Thank you for having me.